Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
An Erios original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning to this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with guest expert Ed Rampel. Ed is a Los Angeles-based film historian and critic. Ed is the author of the 2005 book, Progressive Hollywood, A People's Film History of the United States. He was also the co-organizer of the 70th anniversary commemoration of the Hollywood Blacklist in 2017. Let's hear what he has to say about the Hollywood 10. Hi, Ed. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be with you.
So we're excited to have you on the show to talk about the Hollywood 10. I'm hoping you can start off by setting the stage for us. It's the 1930s. The United States is in the midst of a depression. How is the Hollywood industry being affected?
Well, like the rest of America, there was a lot of labor unrest in Hollywood during the 1930s. And that led, like the creation of the CIO, it also led in Hollywood to the creation of guilds. In other words, screenwriters and other talents were unionized. And also in terms of the content of films, there were independent Communist Party and other artists who tried to use the film medium in order to get ideas out regarding the situation that Americans were facing during the Great Depression.
I see. And what were some of the key unions at the time? I know that you mentioned the Writers Guild. How are they reacting to the economics and the unfair pay gaps, created by the studios?
The Writers Guild, what is now known as the Writers Guild of America, its first president, what became a card-carrying member of the Communist Party, John Howard Lawson, who later was one of the Hollywood Ten. And the communists and other leftists tried to fight for the economic rights of the people in the various segments of the motion picture industry. And the Writers Guild was probably the single most important factor in terms of organized labor in Hollywood, in terms of trying to have progressive standards in the industry, in terms of pay and working conditions, diversity, et cetera, but also in terms of trying to inject content into films so that they would be more than mere mindless entertainment, but would have a consciousness and a conscience.
Now, in the 40s, things are starting to heat up, and there's a lot of anti-communist sentiment. How is this paranoia manifesting?
Well, that's a good question. And during World War II, the studios actually went to a number of the Communist Party screenwriters, such as Dalton Trumbo and Albert Maltz, et cetera, because John Howard Lawson, because they were the most politically aware and they understood what fascism was about. And the studios wanted them to write and craft the morale boosters for World War II to let the masses in America know, as Frank Capra, who, by the way, was definitely not a communist, but as Frank Capra put it in his pseudo-documentary series, Why We Fight, the reasons for fighting fascism. Lawson had written, for example, Blockade, Hollywood's first major feature film about the Spanish Civil War, starring Henry Fonda, although, interestingly enough, they never mentioned the word Spain once in the entire film, which shows the censorship. But Lawson understood the struggle against fascism. So he made in the 40s a number of morale boosters, two of them starring Humphrey Bogart. And one of them, Sahara, starring Bogey, also had a very important Black character, a very dignified African soldier fighting the Nazis, portrayed by Rex Ingram. So the Communist Party talents really understood the dangers of fascism, what the struggle was about. And of course, they wanted, once Stalin started fighting against the Nazis again after the idiotic Hitler-Stalin non-aggression treaty, once the Soviet Union was invaded by the Nazis, the Communist Party screenwriters saw the medium as a way to help defend the USSR against the Nazis. Now, I do want to add that not all of the anti-fascist and progressive filmmakers were members of the Communist Party. The greatest single anti-fascist movie of the period, and maybe of all time, was Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator, which was made in 1940. And this was at a time when Stalin was still aligned in a non-aggression pact with Hitler. And when Europe, except for Charlie's native England, most of Europe was already overrun by the Nazi hordes. Mm-hmm. And Charlie Chaplin made this wonderful film wherein he played two characters, one of them being Adenoid Hinkle, who is the great dictator, Adenoid Hinkle being Adolf Hitler, and who Charlie complained Hitler had stolen his mustache. And the other character Chaplin played was the Jewish barber. And at the end of the film, Chaplin uses one of the oldest tropes in the history of the theater and later of movies and opera, et cetera, the mistaken identity. And he's mistaken at a Nuremberg-style type Nazi rally for being Adenoid Hinkle or Hitler. And he has to make a speech to the assembled masses. And in that speech, Chaplin makes what I would argue is the greatest English language political speech in the entire history of the cinema, where he calls upon the masses to unite and fight for democracy.
Wow.
So there were progressive artists in Hollywood on the left, whether in or out of the Communist Party, and Chaplin was never at any time that I've researched, and I know several members of the Chaplin family. Charlie was never, ever a member of the Communist Party USA, which if he was, he had a legal and constitutional right to be, as did the others, but he mm-hmm. was not. So you had a number of these progressive artists who spoke out during World War II against fascism and in favor of our ally at the time, which was the Soviet Union. People need to remember that Stalin was one of the big three, along with Churchill and FDR, and Moscow was on the same side as Washington after the Nazis invaded. I guess it was in 40 or 41 in Russia. So once the Cold War started in 1947, the powers that be had to crack down on the progressive talents in Hollywood. And that set the stage. The Cold War set the stage for the purges in Hollywood that began on or about October 27th, 1947, when John Howard Lawson was the very first of what became known as the Hollywood 10 to testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Now, could you give us a little backstory on who the Hollywood 10 were and why they were particularly chosen to speak in these hearings?
Good question. I think that it's true that all or most of the Hollywood 10 were at one time or another, if not still in 1947, had joined the Communist Party USA, which was viewed as being one of the most militant, if not the most militant, organized political parties fighting against the capitalist system during the Depression. And most of them were screenwriters. You know, as a writer, I tend to agree with the idea that as general rule, the people who create the story are injecting the most consciousness into a film. Most of the Hollywood 10 were writers, and they included Dalton Trumbo and Lawson, who I mentioned, who did a number of World War II morale boosters, at least three. And there was among the Hollywood 10, there was one director and there was a producer, but most of them were screenwriters.
And what was the FBI's involvement in these investigations, and what kind of findings did they come up with?
The FBI was led by J. Edgar Hoover, and there was a lot of surveillance. Hoover appeared before the House Un-American Activities Committee and delivered a very vicious anti-communist rant. And Hoover's roots went back to the first Red Scare around 1919 or so, at the time of World War One or the end of World War One, and out of that grew what became the FBI. And they infiltrated the Communist Party, which was a legal organization, and spied on different members. And they would tap phones. They would tail people. They would do things like later in the 50s, when somebody who was making, let's say, in 1951, $1,500 a week, like Bobby Lees, the screenwriter of communist propaganda films like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. After people like Bobby Lees were thrown out of their high-paying jobs in Hollywood, when they would finally find some kind of meager employment as like a storekeeper or something like that, a much lower status, much lower paying job. But of course, they still had a support their families and pay the bills, the FBI would show up and tell their bosses that they were employing communists, and then they would lose those jobs too sometimes. So the FBI was very vicious during this entire period.
Now, what happens to the 10 after they're subpoenaed?
That's a really good question. What happened is that all members of the 10, there were two directors in the 10, I should say, and Edward Dmytryk was one of them. And all members, including Dmytryk, who later reneged and recanted, but that's another story. But at the time, in 1947, Dmytryk and all the other members of the Hollywood 10 stood on their First Amendment rights and refused to answer questions. Now the $64,000 question that HUAC would ask was, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? And they all refused to answer that. They all refused to answer questions about their union and other political affiliations. And also, very importantly, they all refused to become informers. Not only did they refuse to inform on themselves, but they wouldn't inform on their colleagues and friends, which was part of the function of the committee, was to force well-paid people, sometimes famous people, great actors like John Garfield, to try and force them to inform on others, which, by the way, Garfield refused to do. And by picking well-paid, sometimes famous, somewhat powerful people in the public eye and forcing them to become informers, it showed the American working class and the masses in general that if these prominent people could be broken and forced to become finks, anybody can be. So the Hollywood 10 were kind of naive because they thought in America, well, the First Amendment will defend us in the land of the free. But they were all slapped with contempt of Congress citations, and they lost their court cases. Then when there was changeover, interestingly, in the Supreme Court, some liberals died. They lost. They didn't win in the Supreme Court either. And they ended up actually going to jail for up to a year and paying monetary fines for contempt of Congress. And by the way, Dalton Trumbo wittily later said, well, they were right. I did hold Congress in contempt.
So how does Hollywood change in the aftermath of these proceedings?
Well, it lasted a long time, and it lasted at least until 1960, when Dalton Trumbo helped to break the blacklist by having his name actually appear on screen when he got screen credit for Exodus and for Spartacus in 1960. But one could say that the blacklist had a long-term residual effects. In a sense, to use a modern analogy, it was like long COVID, because many of the talents were never able to pick up their careers again. They were out of the business for a long time, and they lost their agents and a lot of their contacts. And so a majority of them, and now there were about 300 people in Hollywood who were blacklisted, by the way.
Wow.
And yeah, that's a lot of people. Now, there was a great movie called Trumbo, and Dalton was able to pick up the pieces again. He had continued working throughout the blacklist, as that movie starring Bryan Cranston shows. But he wrote using pseudonyms and using fronts, not his real name, until Spartacus and Exodus in 1960. But a lot of the other talents were never able to pick up the pieces again. And I think that it took until sort of like the late 60s until Hollywood started making progressive films again as a trend. I don't mean here and there, but I mean as a trend some of the blacklisted screenwriters came back, like Abraham Polanski made a great movie about Native Americans, Tell Them Willie Boy Was Here. And Trumbo made a number of films like Papillon and Hawaii with Julie Andrews. And he wrote Johnny Got His Gun, which was based on his earlier novel. What happened was that mass protest in most films, the progressive trend in Hollywood was sidelined for about two decades. And one could say that not only did this affect Hollywood, but it affected American culture as well.
Mm. Now, what role, if any, did the Hollywood press at the time play in perpetuating this blacklist?
Well, you had really vicious gossip columnists, as is depicted in Trumbo. You have really vicious gossip columnists who were part of the purge, part of the persecution, and the Variety and Hollywood Reporter covered what was happening. But I have to admit, I'm not an expert on how those two publications covered, how the trade press covered what happened, although I believe that they were not protesting, the trade publications were not protesting the persecution.
Right. So have there been reparations since the blacklist? How are the Hollywood 10 and those who were blacklisted during the time period viewed now?
You know, that's like a really good question. And there has been a restoration of credits. Dalton Trumbo, one of his films, The Brave One, actually won the Academy Award in a screenwriting category. And nobody came up from the audience to claim that coveted golden statuette, because the name of the screenwriter was basically fictitious, and it was really Dalton Trumbo writing under a pseudonym. And so Trumbo and others got screen credits, including as did, for example, Michael Wilson, who co-wrote movies like Lawrence of Arabia. A lot of the blacklistees did get, belatedly, they got their credits. When those films had won Oscars, they did get credited as winning Oscars. What I would like to see is a special Oscar given out to all of the blacklisted Hollywood talents, the Hollywood 10 and the other 290 or so who are blacklisted. I would like to see a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame acknowledging the Hollywood 10 and the rest of the hundreds who are blacklisted. I think that that question of reparations is a really good one. And how do you repair the harm done to people for persecuting them, for taking their most conscientious stands and positions in their youth? How do you compensate them for dragging them through the mud, through being surveilled by the FBI, tailed by the FBI? And it's an ongoing process. And you know, can I tell you about some of the upcoming events that are going to be commemorating the 75th anniversary of this, of the Hollywood 10?
Yes, we have a little bit of time.
Okay, so the new Academy Museum in LA, the Movie Museum, is tentatively scheduled to present April 13th through April 30th, a program, the Hollywood 10 at 75. Every single film will be either about the blacklistees, or it will be film written and or directed and or starring blacklisted talents.
Huh.
There will be panels and introducers of films. I'm tentatively supposed to be one of the speakers. On March 12th, which I believe is the day of the Academy Awards, the Hollywood Heritage Museum is going to have a program, Legacy of the Hollywood Blacklist, a film narrated by Burt Lancaster and directed by Judy Chaykin. And there will be a panel with children of the blacklistees. And last October, this already happened, but Turner Classic Movies for about 3 weeks had an ongoing series about films on the Hollywood blacklist. So there are a number of commemorations that remind people about the horrors of censorship and political persecution because of people trying to freely express their ideas in the land of the free.
Now, Ed, we'd like to ask all of our guest experts this question. Finally, at the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the Hollywood 10 and what they endured, who or what would that be?
Well, I would have to say the capitalist system. They don't like being criticized. They don't like being mocked and exposed on film. And their handmaidens in the Hollywood studios and in the FBI and in Congress stirred up the Cold War abroad and brought that war home against dissidents and dissenters here in America. They forced people, beloved popular people like Charlie Chaplin, to have to flee America and go abroad. And so I would say the overall capitalist system.
Ed, thank you so much for helping us understand this very sad and relevant tragedy.
It is sad. It remains very relevant when conservative cancel culture ran amok in America. But we must never forget that there were people who were defiant, who stood up with dignity and integrity and resisted against this censorship.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
So Ed ended up sending our capitalistic tendencies, society. I forget how the system, the capitalist system.
The capitalistic system, mm-hmm, yes. But she just said does not like being criticized or mocked.
That's right.
Sounds about right.
And it's interesting because we did talk about this and we were circling around this, but he put it so well, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It is very all-encompassing, and you know, we're not just trying to blame capitalism on everything, but it feels like this one, it felt like shamed or something. Like mm-hmm. It was having a tantrum. Our capitalistic system.
Well, the claws came out.
Don't poke that bear.
The capitalist claws, the cat claws of capitalism.
Yeah. Now, even before that, he gave us so many examples of people in the industry, like Charlie Chaplin, who were, you know, perhaps, you know, they were doing anti-fascist work and then got put into this group of communists. And, you know, he had to flee the country. And, you know, the way Ed described how unfair this treatment was of these writers and artists at the time for being ostracized, you know, just because they were expressing their beliefs is very, it's very sad in a lot of ways, because how do you regain that? How do you get that back? Like Ed was talking about.
Yeah. It's just like a scary situation to be caught up in. Like, you know, I can't help but think about the Crucible, which we talked about. Just like, it seems like there's so much hysteria, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like so easy to get caught up into it unknowingly or just simply by association, and suddenly you are labeled, you know, a communist. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You're kind of just done. It's like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's who you are now.
Yeah. Just someone points a finger and says, I think you're a communist.
I was intrigued by Ed when he was saying that, you know, kind of part of the function of the committee was to really try and force these really big, famous, you know, successful Hollywood writers, talent to, out there others as a way of showcasing to the working man, like, see, like if these big guys can be broken, then like anyone can. So you better watch out, because like that's what the communists are going to do. It's like, so it's like the fear tactic of all of that. The fear mongering is so powerful.
That's interesting.
Totally. And yeah, going back to, you know, when it was like, when the government wanted support for the war and they wanted to drum up enthusiasm, they turned to Hollywood, of course. And then, you know, when
they need someone to blame.
Right. In a way, it was like a double-edged sword.
Right back to Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, you just asked us to help you out over here. Now you're coming after us and sort of unfairly painting us in this light if we don't do everything you ask for. So feels like Hollywood was caught in a little bit of a no-win situation.
Right. It's like the worst. It's like the this is a bad analogy, but it's like, you know, the producers coming in, or like the corporation coming in with like the worst notes that they just don't get it. And they're just like messing with, and the town's like, oh my God, this is not how it works. Don't do that.
Yeah. We could have put like Washington DC's bad notes.
Yeah. Don't make us write it and then blame us for what you had us write.
Right. Now, what did we end up sending to the alarmist jail, Clayton? And what did we end up slapping? Because I know there was a big row of slaps.
We were heavy with the slaps, yes. We threw whack HWAC, the House Un-American Committee Activities
of, Committee. Of Un-American Activities. HUAC.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
HUAC was thrown in jail, and we gave a big line of slaps to fear of losing the American idea, Senator McCarthy, and the studio system. We're all slapped.
Fear.
So
okay.
You could kind of, I guess, roll the American idea and Senator McCarthy and the studio system all into the big C.
The big capitalism C.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You could.
I mean, you could do that.
And just give
I mean,
it one big slap. Although it's been slapped and thrown in jail already. So do we want to do it?
Do we want to do it again?
Yeah.
All right. I feel like I do like the way that Ed explained it.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, while it feels like capitalism can be broad or all encompassing.
Encompass.
All encompassing.
Yes.
It just felt right. It sat right with me. I like the specificity and of all of the players that we ended up slapping and mm-hmm. throwing into the alarmist jail. So maybe we send the capitalistic system to the alarmist jail, and we just include the HUAC into the slaps. So this is a four slapperoo suddenly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll call it. The capitalist system, you're going to the alarmist jail. The HUAC, Senator McCarthy, fear of losing the American idea, the studio system, you're all getting the big slap. Okay, that felt great. It was great talking to Ed. Now, we don't usually, you know, we always have our guests come in and promote some of the stuff they're working on, but it's not often that we promote our own stuff. And Chris, you have a big show coming up. I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about it.
Yes. Well, as a lot of you know me as the fact checker, and mm-hmm. that is probably my most important and highest paying job that I do have.
But biggest role of your life.
It's the biggest role of my life. But however, I'm also an actor.
Mm.
And I wrote a one-man show. Wow. It's
you were impressed by yourself.
Well, I thought if I said wow, you guys would be like, oh wow, cool.
Oh, you're prompting us.
You guys didn't. Okay.
Oh wow, Clayton, come on.
Ooh la la.
Uh huh.
Okay, it's called Acting for a Time Such as This, and it's basically, things are so terrible right now. Should I keep being an actor? That's the question that I ask. And then I ask basically, what is acting? And then I also ask, if I shouldn't be an actor, what should I be? A doctor? Excuse me.
Oh my God, he got choked up.
Got that.
Yeah. Most actors who are contemplating leaving the profession are usually contemplating going right into med school. So this is going to be a great, relatable show, I can already tell.
So yeah, Acting for a Time Such as This, I'm doing it at the Groundlings in Los Angeles. You can go to the Groundlings website and find tickets there. It's February 7th, which is sold out. Oh, I'm sorry, February 4th, which is sold out, and also February 18th, which isn't sold out yet.
Okay, well, that's exciting. We'll have to follow your poll. You know, I'm sure you'll be putting polls out, asking people if they think you should continue.
Right,
being an actor, and we'll be following to see what's up, because you might have a lot of time on your hands.
Right, if I end up not acting anymore, then you know I might end up having a lot more time to do fact checking, so it could improve the show in a sense.
Right, that'll be interesting. Now, stay tuned, because next week we're going to be discussing the 1776 Great Fire of New York.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.